It's good to be here and to join together and to share together this morning in worship at the beginning and also in coming and remembering Jesus. I don't know what you're like with surprises. I had one yesterday. And in fact, I expect others here might have had surprises. What day was it yesterday? It's moving, isn't it? I won't show you what was inside, but it's moving. It's great to receive surprises at times, but sometimes we find it difficult to... Well, that wasn't the end of surprises for me yesterday. Neither Joy or I think she'll agree with me here, are particularly romantic. But yesterday, she cooked a meal, a candlelit meal, in our dining room at home. To say I was shocked is not the way of expressing it. But we have surprises. And I think yesterday is a day that so often we remember and we appreciate one another and love that's being shown towards us. That's no good. It's appreciate the fact of what we have and what we've been given and those that mean something to us. My wife, in addition to that, has been sending a Valentine's card to a friend of ours for about 50 years. He's a great friend, a good friend, and I can't remember how it started, but they send them backwards and forwards between each other. But that doesn't matter to me because it's just showing the fact there is love and concern for that person. How far does our love and concern for others stretch? And how much does a heart mean to us? We'll be looking at this a little later on. What are our hearts like? And that really is the title I've given really to our talk this morning. What is your heart like? And there's many different ways of looking at that. But first of all, let's think a little bit more about the passage that we'll be looking at today. I've stretched it a little bit farther than Steve, and I'm looking from verse 17 of Matthew chapter 5 down to verse 30. So let's have a look at that, and let's read that section. Matthew chapter 5, verse 17. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter nor the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Therefore, anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commands and teaches others accordingly will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. You have heard that it is said to the people long ago, "You shall not murder." And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother or sister, Raca, or curse them, which is what it means, that word, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of a fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly, I say to you, you will not get out until you have paid the penalty. You have heard that it is said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your eyes cause you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose a part of your body than the whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than your whole body to go to hell. Some of the teachings, what you actually get in the Sermon on the Mount, are quite difficult. They're quite challenging. And we've gone through this series now and looked at a number of different parts of this Sermon on the Mount, looking first of all at the Beatitudes, then last week looking at salt and light. But this week, we can look at something I think that is very fundamental as far as us as people. What is our heart like? How is our heart each day in our attitude towards others around us? How do we treat them? This fundamental teaching that we've been going through, I think, is so important as a foundation to our Christian faith. If our Christian faith means much to us, it changes the way we are as people. It helps us to appreciate what God's standards are, and not just what ours are, and not the way the world may think we should live and we should stand with each other. It's challenging, it's demanding, and it makes a real difference to us as people when we take it on board and try, and I don't want to make excuses, try and live out our lives as Christians. Because it's not easy when we are challenged time and time again by things that other people do and the way in which the world considers we should be. And sometimes we get confused and find it very hard to appreciate what God is expecting of us. I'm going to look at three areas in that passage. First of all, the law, then anger, and then looking at adultery or what the heart is really like. When we look at the first part of that, the law, it's made very clear in what Jesus said that we should keep the law. Now, what's the law is he referring to? He says the law and the prophets. The prophets very often taught people to do what was right because they were deviating away from what God wanted. They were not following what God had commanded them, what God had encouraged them to do. But when we look at the law in Exodus chapter 20 that was given to the people of Israel, which is referred to as the Ten Commandments, are a tremendous foundation for us to stand by as far as living and relating to other people around us. God has shown us grace nonetheless. And Jesus came to show us grace and truth. If we look at John chapter 1 and verse 17, it says, "For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." There needs to be a balance between those two, an understanding of both sides. Why was the law given? The law was given so as people might relate to one another and understand and be aware of the needs for one another. So as we live in a life that is not falling out with people all the time or doing things that are wrong that affect other people around us or the communities in which we live. Jesus came not just to keep the law, but to fulfill the law. An important foundation of living. He came to fulfill it, not just to keep it. What does it mean when it says the purpose of the law? What is the purpose of having laws? Why do we have laws? The laws have come to control and stop us in any way contravening other people's rights. There is a danger in having too many rules. I think more and more in our country, we seem to be relying on laws and rules. Many seem to be brought out, and time again we hear of them, but they are so difficult to implement, so difficult to follow. And sometimes we might find that some of those laws that are brought out contravene with what I understand is God's law, contravene what is moral law. And that is another point. I'm not going to try and expand on that in respect of moral law. But there is a standard of living that we should maintain, certainly as Christians, and I do believe as all human beings. But there is a real purpose behind the law. It's there to protect and to control. And there is a purpose. And Jesus was saying to the people, look, you need to keep that law nonetheless. Okay, things are going to change. Now, bear in mind, when Jesus is bringing this teaching to the people, it's not after he's gone to the cross and died on the cross and showed that he loved us and died for us to fulfill that law. No, It is a time prior to that. And he's speaking to people who wouldn't yet understand what his teaching was all about. He's laying a foundation, a difficult foundation, because people didn't understand him. And it became evident as he went through his disciples, those who were the closest followers, they at times just did not understand what Jesus was. I wonder how well we would have understood it ourselves. Have you ever tried to put yourself in that situation? Would I really have understood what Jesus was all about living in that society in those days? I'm not a Jew. I'm not from a Jewish background and don't fully understand their way of thinking. We're fortunate in our home group, you've got somebody who's from a Jewish background. I'll mention her name. I don't want to embarrass her this morning. Sue Axford. And she is so helpful in helping us to understand something of the background of what is in the scriptures. And it's useful to understand background, but is not always the reason that we actually have the scriptures and have to understand the background. So what really is the purpose of the law? I tend to go to the internet very often to get answers to some of my questions. Sometimes they're rubbish. Other times they're most helpful. And I think in this particular case, in looking at purpose, it certainly gave me an understanding of what the purpose of the law was. The purpose of the law is to govern human conduct through establishing rules, maintaining social order, protecting the individual liberties, and resolving disputes peacefully. It acts as a framework for democracy, ensuring practice provides security and regulating economic and social relationship. Now, if you remember that, well done. I don't suppose you will, but if you want more detail, I'll let you have it. That's for sure. But there is purpose behind law. There is a real reason for it being there. And that's what Jesus was saying. Look, there is a real purpose so as you can live together, so as you can conduct your lives in a way that helps one another. But beware, don't ignore the law. It can be at your consequence. I've got some points on my driving license for speeding. I ignored the law. I didn't follow it. Sometimes we don't agree with the law. And we can, as Christians, find that there are laws that have been brought out in our country that we can't be happy with, comfortable with, because we see as our Christian faith, it really challenges those particular areas. So that's the point I was looking at the law. Next one comes, anger. Do you ever get angry? I shouldn't be looking around. Things upset us, don't they? That's human. Things of injustice. Things that we look at and we see and we think. And we use a term, I think, that is not always good. That's not fair. How can we judge what is fair? Can we? Can you? Can I? I don't think so. I think there's only one who can, and that's God. And we need to listen to what God is actually saying and understanding. But Jesus, in respect to anger, goes perhaps a little further than we expect. He stands out in what he actually says, what we should actually do. You shall not murder. Anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you, anyone who gets angry with his brother will be subject to judgment as well. We look at the law and we think about the law. This is going a bit farther. And I think what we look at as far as the whole Sermon on the Mount, it takes relationships and how we respect God and how we respect others, another stage. And here is a stage where it says it's actually looking and thinking anyone who commits murder, yes, that's wrong, but he gets angry with a brother or sister. Do we hold it against people when we get angry? Do we go and ask for forgiveness? Do we know forgiveness? Can we forgive as people? I'm sure there are many illustrations in respect to that. But reconciliation brings a peace into a person's heart and changes their feeling and understanding. Jesus got angry. He went into the temple one day and he found in the temple there were money changers there that were exchanging money and diddling people, basically. And he didn't like it. It was wrong. and it caused him to become angry. He was angry against what was taking place in what he saw as God's house. But how often, in feeling angry, do we forgive? Forgiveness. There are a number of examples. If we actually look in society, and some of you may have heard of the name Corrie ten Boom. She was imprisoned during the Second World War, and then eventually came face to face with one of those who was her captors, and she found it extremely hard. And I'm sure there are many people similar to that must have found it extremely hard. You may have remember those of you who were loyalists or royalists listening to the Queen's speech a number of years ago, where there was somebody in Northern Ireland whose daughter was killed when a bomb went off that was set off by the IRA. And he was there holding her hand as she was buried under the bricks, and she passed away. And he came and he passed a comment. He forgave. Could you? Could I? We don't know unless faced with those circumstances. But we are challenged that we should be people who are prepared to forgive. It goes a little bit farther in respect to this statement as well when we look at this second part of the passage that we looked at, looking really at passing comment to people and calling them a fool or being unkind in our way in which we speak to people. I was taken aback some years ago, not thinking. I said something in respect to a grandchild. I said he was foolish. What he did was foolish, but calling him a fool is condemned here. And it's a challenge, isn't it? How we say things, what we say, and how we say it. And that is often a comment we say. Some people will say something the same as somebody else, but it's the way that it's actually said that makes the difference. But putting things right is what God is saying. Don't let a war, don't let a division stand between you and others. And don't come and worship or try and worship or have communion as we've done this morning when you have a division between you or somebody else because of what you think. Show forgiveness. And I accept, and I said this a moment ago, and I think it's right, it's not always easy. Some of us might find it harder than others. Some of us find it more difficult to be able to forgive. And some acts that have taken place make it much more difficult to actually forgive. You may remember some time ago, a lady in France was in court because of the fact she had been abused. Her name was Ghislaine Petitcoat, and she was on TV recently. May not have been on TV, but she was certainly being interviewed by Victoria Derbyshire. And during her interview, she said she didn't hold anger against any of those people that had abused her. That must have been so hard. So much appreciated by others that they listened to what she said. She didn't hold anger. Anger destroys the person who is angry. It doesn't necessarily affect the other person who you're angry to or about. So what is really being said here is we need to be a people who are prepared to forgive. Coming to the last section, looking at adultery. I'm not going to look at the details of adultery, whether it's right or wrong. I know it's wrong. And that is for sure what is being said here. It is something that is wrong. But it isn't that that is the key to this passage that we're looking at. The key is what the heart is like. What is the heart like in this situation? Is it something of the heart, or is it something more than that? There can be lustful looks and desires. That is what is being condemned here, that it's coming not just from the mind, may not even be from the actions, but it's coming from the heart of the individual. The heart is important. So much so, we wouldn't be here without it this morning, would we? Any of us. we have a blood pump pushing blood around our heart that is essential. Some of our hearts may be a little bit tired, may have had a few problems with them, may have to keep on being controlled in respect to taking tablets. I get fed up with taking tablets. I don't know about you. Any of the other people here have to take tablets? But nonetheless, they keep us alive. And our heart is essential for us as individuals in our lives each day. We wouldn't be here without them. But the heart is used in many, many illustrations in respect to our lives. I mentioned and showed one this morning. I'll show you that card. There's the heart. What comes to your mind when you look at that? Anybody want to shout out? Straight away, isn't it? It's an important thing, isn't it? That's love. That's certainly something that is illustrated, but the word and term is used so often. Just think of a couple. Soft-hearted, quite often. And what comes to your mind when somebody says that? Hard-hearted. That was a challenge to me some time ago. Was I being hard-hearted in a particular situation? Was my heart too hard? You don't know that. You look at me, might think, oh, I'm being kind and considerate. But it's only me as an individual, or you as an individual, who understands what your heart is really like and what your attitude is really like in a situation. The term heartless, that's one that comes out quite often, isn't it? It says something about us as a person. I remember a program that used to be, I think it was on the radio years ago, Heart of the Matter. Searching to find the real reason behind something. Really wanted to know the answers to issues. We're challenged sometimes to be wholehearted in our approach towards something. What does that really mean? Give everything. The heart is difficult to define in this term. It isn't something that's physical, like the pump that goes on here in my body and your bodies. No, it's the core. I would look at it as the core of our body, our person, as an individual. It gives expression to the way in which we do things. Our heart is demonstrating with the outcome of the way in which we live, if that makes sense to you. We live out what is inside us as people. Not just what's in here, but what's right inside us as individuals. And it's demonstrated, it can be demonstrated, in the way in which we treat one another. Do we treat others with a heart of love and concern? Or has our heart become hard? In Matthew chapter 13, verse 15, it says, "For these people, hearts have become callous." I was talking to Hannah a few days ago, and she was saying about how on her fingers, because she does so much sewing, she's got hard bits on the end, calluses, as we refer to them. And is that how our heart can become? Because of circumstances, things cause us to become hard-hearted, to become people who don't demonstrate the love of Jesus in the way in which we live. In Mark chapter 12 and verse 30, he says, "Love the Lord your God with..." Challenge, isn't it? What's that mean? It means our complete person. The whole of us should come and bring worship. When we come on a Sunday morning, we give praise and thanks to God. And it's great to be able to do that. How much more difficult is it when we go away from here? How much difficult is it in our lives each day? And these verses and words that we find in the Sermon on the Mount to challenge us in that direction. How you live out your Christian experience, your Christian life. Hard-hearted. Again, a quotation from the internet. Hard-hearted describes a person lacking kindness, sympathy, compassion, often acting in a cold, unfeeling, cruel manner. It's significant. It signifies an inability or unwillingness to be moved by the suffering of others, frequently used to describe someone who is ruthless, callous, and merciless. Challenge sometimes. It goes farther than that, I think, hard-heartedness. It goes much farther than that. But sometimes we refer to people as soft-hearted. I remember someone I was working with a number of years ago, and she was a very kind-hearted person. She was very willing to help as much as she could. But one day, she lent some money to somebody, and they didn't repay her. and she was angry about it. She came and she talked to me. And the challenge came to me is, how do you deal with somebody who comes, who has feeling like that? And I understand the feeling, but nonetheless, don't lose that soft-heartedness was my attitude towards her, and saying, don't let that one instance cause you become hardened towards in your own heart. Because you have concern and love for people, you want to be kind and helpful towards people as much as you can. So, can I go back to the question that I had in my thoughts initially? And that was the title I gave to what we were talking about today. What is your heart like? Is your heart hard, soft, loving, concerning, compassionate? I don't know. As I said earlier, you know what your heart is like. But here's words that have really challenged us in what we have been reading here in these books, in this chapter of Matthew. So we've looked really at the law, anger, adultery, or what our heart is like. These are important things to know and to understand in our lives. Yes, that picture that we have of a heart is important. It's a reminder. And I've got some reminders in my pocket that you might like to take when you leave this morning. In fact, I've come round and offered them to you. You might not be able to see them from where you are because they're quite small. But it's a reminder. And I think we need reminders each day. It's a tiny little heart. Is yours like this? Stone? Which isn't, it's synthetic. But is it like that? Or is it something that's malleable? Something that's soft? Something that can be changed by circumstances around us? We can show love and concern from our fellow human beings as well as our fellow Christians. God is in our hearts. There are many of us who know and love the Lord Jesus Christ, and he means a lot to us, and we recognize what he's done for us. But how much does that affect the way in which we live our lives, the way we are as people? How much does it affect how we portray ourselves in the way we live our lives each day? We had a song last week that challenged me and made me think about what we were, and it goes with the words, open the eyes of my heart. Help me to see what I'm like and the way in which I am in living our lives out. So I'm going to hand over to the worship group to lead us as we finish this morning. Thank you.